Our next presenter is Kathleen Farrell. She's a senior health researcher with RTI International and is a product director to evaluate the Medicaid and CHIP outreach grants. Ms. Farrell is also the product director for other RTI evaluations focused on Medicaid expansions, state medical homes, and Medicaid incentives for adopting healthy behaviors. Prior to RTI, Ms. Farrell was at the National Academy of State Health Policy. And before that, she was director of the Children's Health Insurance Program at CMS.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. It's late in the day. States actually did an incredibly successful job enrolling children in both Medicaid and CHIP programs. It was about 90% of all children enrolled. So the remaining children really are considered to be the hard-to-reach children. And, with traditional outreach strategies not being really successful. So as a result of that, CMS funded 107 organizations. They looked for organizations that they felt had credibility in the community and could actually reach these families. So they funded community-based organizations, faith-based organizations, school-based organizations, and that's about it. So the study is actually about two, it's actually broken into two groups. The first group, known as Cycle One, were funded from 2009 to 2011. There were 69 organizations in that group. And the second group, known as Cycle Two, were funded in 2011 and went through 2013. The intent, grantees really had to consider the barriers faced by uninsured families. And they include a lack of knowledge about the Medicaid and CHIP programs, thinking that those programs are welfare and not wanting to have that stigma of being on them, or thinking that working families make too much money to actually be on one of these programs when, in fact, they may very well be eligible for CHIP. There's also a misperception among American Indian and Alaskan Natives that their children do not need Medicaid or CHIP because they are eligible for health services through the Indian Health Service, even though that's not a comprehensive health program. And there's also a fear of deportation in families that have mixed immigration status, so they're afraid to come forward and apply. And then when we look at rural areas, there's a lack of transportation, there's geographic isolation, and bad weather that keep people from coming in and applying. And then, also once you actually help the family through the eligibility process, which many families find very daunting, especially when it comes to producing documentation related to citizenship or their finances, you have to then make sure that you're actually retaining children who stay on. When I was actually at CMS working on CHIP, there were several states that had about a 40% drop-off rate of children when they came up on their annual renewals. So what we did was we actually synthesized information from grantees' reports. Grantees reported quarterly. We also conducted annual interviews with them that lasted about 90 minutes. We verified their tracking, how they tracked applications, and that they verified enrollments with the state. Our evaluation showed that grantees that met or exceeded their enrollment goals had essentially three broad strategies that they were able to do. They provided outreach at events targeted specifically towards families that they were trying to reach. They identified families with uninsured children and contacted them by phone or in person and helped them in completing applications. And they established strong partnerships with organizations that have a similar mission and interact with families with eligible but unenrolled children. Most strategies were used in combination because really needed to have multiple exposure before families, the message kind of sunk in. In terms of one of the most challenging things really for many of these grantees was accurately targeting their resources, being able to identify their children. We heard from many grantees that, you know, they would go to an event thinking that there would be eligible children only to find out that many of them were already enrolled. Some tried working with Head Start, for example, and found no unenrolled children. So actually, you know, being able to target was really important. And it takes a lot of planning, and it really takes talking with members of the community where these children live to try to find out where, you know, where they can get in touch with these families, where they live, work, and play. And also working with organizations that, you know, are already working with these low-income families so they can help them identify those children. Particularly important, you know, in trying to develop your outreach program is thinking about the characteristics of the target audience and how you select the appropriate medium for disseminating outreach messages and educational materials. Radio spots and TV ads can be very effective, especially when they're linked with a direct action parents can take, such as, you know, calling a helpline. The most effective interactions grantees have reported are those where someone takes the time to actually sit down and talk with the family and answer any questions that they have. Featuring local people, showing cultural sensitivity, and also showing community workers as part of events can really help in building credibility and laying the groundwork for working with families. And there's really no one approach that works. I mean, approaches really have to be tailored for the situation. As I mentioned, building rapport and trust through one-on-one application assistance was found by every grantee that exceeded their outreach goals as being the most effective strategy. Grantees had to find workers who could relate to the culture of the target population, and that really helped in building trust and rapport. Training and up-to-date knowledge about CHIP and Medicaid eligibility and renewal was really critical so that family questions could be answered, that people could be screened for eligibility, and the worker could make sure the application is complete and actually also serve as an advocate with county eligibility workers so that they could actually run interference if questions came up about the completeness of the application. Following up and getting documentation from parents, especially related to finances, can be extremely challenging and requires a lot of patience and follow-up. It's really important to it's really important to meet families where they are. Let me just see. I think I might have just gone too far with slides. Yeah. Okay, so this is the I'm sorry about that. Clinic inReach can be very effective and really provide the grantees that were providers that really had experience, you know, dealing with this population really had a great advantage over other grantees in that they were already familiar with the eligibility and enrollment process. Grantees that were not in this position really took them quite a bit of time to kind of get up to speed and get the infrastructure in place. certainly the clinic, you know, having the front desk or intake staff identify uninsured children for referral to the outreach workers was very effective in getting families enrolled and actually including everybody within the provider site, making sure that the management and the providers bought into this process really made a huge difference. And many grantees collaborated with hospital emergency rooms and hospital clinics and actually would go over to the hospital and check in to see if there were any referrals and really helped in getting children enrolled. The most key feature for whether or not grantees were going to be successful really had to do with developing partnerships, especially because, as I said, many grantees didn't really have the initial infrastructure. They really needed to have that assistance from other organizations that had actually worked directly with clients and, you know, were well known by those communities. Grantee and what was also really important was actually providing training to these partner organizations so that they were familiar with CHIP and Medicaid and they had the skills themselves to make those referrals. It was also really important to monitor the referrals we receive and make sure that in fact that this, you know, information is staying out there in front of everybody. One of the other really important things that collaborations and partnerships were able to do was that if you worked with government agencies that actually administered programs with similar populations, such as WIC, SNAP, Health Start, and the Lunch Program, it really helped you in identifying families that might have eligible children. It also really allowed one-stop application sites, which people really, really like. And not only that, they normally had the documentation with them that they'd need to apply, so it really worked well. And, you know, it also allowed you to stretch your resources in that you could utilize existing staff that already had application assistance experience. Many grantees tried partnering with schools. They found that in many cases it was a really difficult partnership because of privacy issues in particular. But the partnerships that did work had buy-in from top leadership. Some of them had very simple strategies that made great sense. So, for example, when they got the leadership to agree that when parents were filling out their child's registration, they could ask the question whether or not they had insurance and whether it was okay to refer them to the grantee. And that was simple as that was the most successful strategy that they had. Some schools actually provided free and reduced price meal information to help identify eligible children to grantees if they got permission from the parents. So that in that way could be very successful. In terms of evaluation, grantees were required to actually track applications and verify enrollments with the state. Grantees that were provider-based really had an advantage over others in that they were able to do that through their own systems. Other grantees actually had to develop memorandums of understanding with the state and get that feedback from them. They were then supposed to actually take it down to the next level and track their different strategies to see whether or not, in fact, those particular strategies resulted in enrollment. And that was really very important to do because it allowed them to make decisions on whether to continue or modify strategies to see whether or not they were successful, and if they weren't, to actually adopt new ones. And that ability to make midstream changes was very important. I will say that probably only half of the grantees actually had the ability to do this. Not that it was very difficult to do, But they, because some of them actually did it, just did it with an Excel spreadsheet, but a lot of them just didn't. In terms of, lessons learned, I mean, certainly, information, education, ongoing training, and CHIP, Medicaid is very important. Cultural competency is very, very important. If you're going to establish trust and rapport with the populations that you're trying to meet, it's really important to meet families where they are. I mean, you really have to understand why a family is uninsured and figure out how to address those barriers. And there isn't one simple way of doing that. It would be nice if there were, but there isn't. Following up with families. I mean, we heard grantees talking about, figuring that probably it took them up to 20 hours to enroll a child when they actually looked at how long it actually took. We also found that there was a big spillover effect of these grants within the communities. Grantees in their role of actually reaching out to families also provided enrollment to them in Medicaid and other programs for which they might be eligible. So they were actually got children enrolled and families enrolled in multiple programs such as WIC, TANF, SNAP, this energy programs. Or if they weren't eligible for Medicaid, there were county programs in some cases that they were able to actually hook them into. So that's